Okay, so I want to start today with a little visualization exercise. I want you to picture the most expensive high-end kitchen you can possibly imagine.
Okay.
We're talking marble countertops, minimalist lighting, and right in the center, this massive double-door refrigerator made of brushed stainless steel.
Ah, the kind that costs more than my first car. I know the one.
Exactly that one.
Yeah.
Now focus on that steel surface. You know, it's
Okay.
gray. It's matte, it's perfectly uniform. That look screams luxury and cleanliness, right?
Totally.
Now imagine walking up to it, and instead of that perfect gray, there are these jagged, ugly, reddish streaks running down the front, like the metal is bleeding rust.
Oh, that immediately ruins the illusion. You wouldn't buy it. You'd assume it was defective or, old.
Right. And for the steel industry, that visual defect is a nightmare. It's not just an aesthetic issue, it's a complete deal breaker.
Yeah.
If the surface isn't perfect, that steel is often just scrap. Today, we're diving into the science of why that happens. The defect has this name that sounds a bit like a medieval plague, Red Scale.
It does sound dramatic, but, in the world of metallurgy, it is a plague. It's a stubborn, really difficult to predict surface defect that appears during the hot rolling process.
And to understand this red plague, we're looking at a fascinating document. It's a master's thesis called High Temperature Oxidation of Psi-Containing Steel.
Right. It's from Yunju Song at the Graduate Institute of Ferrous Technology at Pohang University of Science and Technology.
And what I love about this source is that it really bridges the gap between, massive industrial engineering, big machines, hot fire, and this microscopic chemistry.
It explains how a single element, one you add to make steel stronger, can accidentally destroy its surface.
So our mission for this deep dive is to act as detectives. We have a victim, the steel slab, we have a crime scene, the furnace, and we have a lineup of chemical suspects.
And we need to figure out why making steel better on the inside makes it look so much worse on the outside.
To do that, we have to start in the kitchen.
Or the factory floor version of a kitchen, the hot strip
Yeah.
mill. Right. If you want to turn a, say, 3-ton slab of solid steel into a thin sheet for a car body or a refrigerator, you can't just mash it cold. It's way too
You
hard.
have to heat it up.
You have to heat it up until it becomes plastic, malleable.
And then we are talking about a gentle warming here. The thesis specifies that these slabs are reheated to around 1200 degrees Celsius.
That is volcanic heat, and this is where the trouble begins. You have a slab of iron sitting in a furnace at 1200 degrees. Even if you try to control the atmosphere, there's always oxygen present.
And iron and oxygen.
They have a very toxic relationship at high temperatures. They hook up instantly.
So the surface reacts.
Instantly. It reacts with the oxygen to form a crust. We call this crust scale. Now, if you're imagining a simple layer of rust, you need to think more complex. Song's research details that this scale is actually a structured layer cake of different oxides.
So it's not just one thing, it's a stack.
Precisely, it's three distinct layers. The bottom layer, the one adhering directly to the scale, is called wustite, or FeO. This is the big one. It makes up about 95% of the scale's thickness.
95%. Okay, so a thick base of wustite.
Then, sitting on top of that is a layer of magnetite, Fe3O4, which is about 4%. And finally, the very thin top crust, maybe 1%, is hematite, or Fe2O3.
Wustite, magnetite, hematite. It sounds like a trio of villains.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. Factories know this happens, right? They expect the scale.
It's part of the process.
Oh, absolutely. You
Yeah.
cannot roll that scale into the steel. If you do, it gets embedded in the metal and just ruins the surface finish. So right after the furnace and before the rolling mill, there is a crucial step,
The hydraulic descaler.
which is essentially a violent high-pressure water cannon. It blasts the hot steel with these water jets to crack that oxide crust and wash it all away.
So in a perfect world,
Yeah.
you heat the steel, you build the crust,
Blast the crust off.
and then roll the clean metal.
For plain carbon steel, simple scale, that works 99% of the time. The scale just pops right off and you're good to go. But we don't live in a simple world. We want steel that is stronger, lighter, more conductive.
Which means we have to add ingredients. We have to alloy it. And this brings us to our primary suspect in the Red Scale mystery, silicon.
Silicon is incredibly useful. The thesis outlines three big reasons we add it. First, something called solid solution hardening.
Which just means it makes the steel stronger.
A lot stronger, and without losing its ductility, meaning it can still stretch without snapping.
That's vital for car parts that need to absorb impact.
Exactly. Second, it stabilizes retained austenite, which is a crystal structure that helps with toughness. And third, if you're making electrical components like transformers, silicon improves electrical resistance.
So we can't just stop using silicon. We need it. But the thesis argues that silicon is the reason the descaler stops working.
It creates the silicon paradox. You add it for internal strength, but it destroys the external quality. When you have silicon in the steel and you heat it to 1200 degrees, it doesn't just sit there. It travels to the surface and reacts with the oxygen and the iron.
And it creates a new character in our story, a compound called phaolite.
Fe2IO4. Phaolite. This is the key to the whole problem. To understand why, you have to look at the temperatures again. We are heating the furnace to 1200 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
The melting point of phaolite is roughly 11,173 degrees Celsius.
I see. So the furnace is hotter than the melting point. The phaolite melts.
Correct. So while the wüstite and magnetite layers are these solid crusts, the phaolite forms a liquid film right at the interface between the steel and the scale.
Now hold on. If it's liquid, shouldn't that make it easier to remove? I'm thinking of grease or oil. If there's a liquid layer, shouldn't the scale just slide right off when the water hits it?
That is the intuitive thought, but at a microscopic level, this liquid behaves very differently. It doesn't act like a lubricant. It acts more like tree roots. Yes. The thesis describes how this liquid phaolite penetrates into the grain boundaries. It seeps into the microscopic cracks of the solid wüstite scale above it and the solid steel below it.
So it's infiltrating both solids.
Yes. And here's the kicker. As the steel moves from the furnace to the descaler, it cools down slightly. As soon as it drops below 1173 degrees, that liquid phaolite solidifies.
And since it's rooted into both sides,
it becomes a mechanical anchor. It glues the scale to the steel. The thesis explicitly calls this the anchoring effect. So when the high pressure water hits it, the bond is just too strong. The scale refuses to break away.
The power washer fails.
Yeah.
So you still have these patches of wüstite scale stuck to the steel. But wait, wüstite is FeO. Isn't FeO black?
It is, yeah.
So why is the defex called red scale?
That's the reveal of the crime. So you have these patches of black wüstite glued to the steel by the phaolite. Now, the steel goes into the rolling mill. Massive pressure. The rollers crush the steel to flatten it. That pressure fractures the brittle wüstite scale that was left behind. It cracks it all open.
Opening it up to the air again.
Exactly. And the steel is still very hot. So the oxygen rushes into those cracks, it attacks the fractured black FeO, and rapidly oxidizes it further. It turns into Fe3O4, and finally into alpha-Fe2O3.
Which is hematite.
Which, in its powdered, crushed form, is bright red.
That is wild. So the red streak you see on the finished product is basically the crushed, fossilized remains of the scale that failed to wash off earlier.
It's a scar, a red scar telling you that the descaling process failed because of that phaolite glue.
Okay, so we have the main villain, silicon, forming these liquid phaolite roots. But the thesis mentions this isn't a solo act. There's an accomplice.
Nickel.
I always think of nickel as one of the good guys. Makes steel shiny, corrosion resistant.
It does, usually. But in this specific context of high temperature oxidation, nickel plays a very snobby role. It is what we call nobler than iron.
Noble. As in, it thinks it's too good to mix with the commoners.
Chemically, yes. It has a very low affinity for oxygen. So imagine the surface of the steel in the furnace. The iron atoms are rushing out to meet the oxygen and become scale. The silicon atoms are rushing out. But the nickel...
It stays put.
It stays put. It refuses to oxidize. So the iron leaves to become scale, and the nickel gets left behind.
Gets concentrated.
Exactly. The thesis calls this nickel enrichment. You end up with a layer of high concentration nickel right at the interface between the steel and the scale.
Does that create another chemical glue?
Not chemical. This one's mechanical. Song's research highlights something really interesting here. This nickel enrichment changes the shape of the interface. Instead of a smooth, flat line between metal and oxide, the nickel causes the interface to become rough and jagged.
Jagged how? Like teeth?
Kind of, or like a coastline, or even better, Velcro. The thesis compares steel with just trace nickel versus steel with only 0.1% nickel. The difference is stark. The nickel-enriched interface is all entangled.
Wow. So let's combine these.
Yeah.
You have silicon creating a chemical glue, the phaolite roots, and you have nickel creating a mechanical, the Velcro effect.
And that combination is just disastrous for descalability. If the interface is smooth, the scale might shear off even with the glue. But if it's jagged and glued, the water blaster doesn't stand a chance.
It's amazing how we're talking about tiny amounts here. 0.1% nickel. It seems so negligible.
That's the beauty of metallurgy. Trace elements dictate the behavior of tons of material. And the author, Unjusong didn't just look at pictures, they actually predicted this using thermodynamics.
The outline mentions Ellingham diagrams. That sounds like a terrifying flashback to high school chemistry.
It's actually a very useful tool. Think of an Ellingham diagram as a sort of leaderboard. It ranks elements by how much they want oxygen. The lower you are on the chart, the hungrier you are for it.
So who's winning?
Silicon is way down at the bottom. It wants oxygen much more than iron does. That confirms why silicon rushes to the surface to form phaolite. But thermodynamics only tells you what should happen. It doesn't tell you how fast.
That's kinetics, the race.
The race, exactly. The study calculated the growth rates at 1,000 degrees. It turns out wüstite, the iron oxide, is the sprinter. It grows very fast, about 0.12 micrometers squared per second.
Yeah.
Phaolite is much slower, and pure silica is the slowest of all. But here is the critical finding on stability. The study found that you essentially cannot have FeO, SO2, and FeTCO4 all coexisting peacefully.
One of them has to dominate.
In that specific oxygen environment, phaolite is the thermodynamic winner. It is more stable than having the other two separate. This confirms that if you have silicon and iron oxidized together, the formation of that phaolite glue layer is chemically inevitable. You can't just wish it away.
So if it's inevitable, are we doomed? If we need silicon for strength, do we just have to accept ugly red steel?
Not necessarily. The thesis looked for solutions. They investigated other alloying elements to see if they could disrupt this mechanism. They looked at aluminum.
And did aluminum help?
It was a bit of a wash. Aluminum also forms an oxide layer, but the thesis noted it didn't create that same severe unevenness or roughness that nickel did.
So it wasn't as bad as nickel, but it didn't solve the sticky phaolite problem.
Right. It's kind of a benign bystander. But then they looked at phosphorus.
Phosphorus. Now, I know enough about steel to know that phosphorus is usually considered an impurity. You want to get rid of it because it makes steel brittle, right?
Generally, yes. In cold environments, high phosphorus is very bad news. But in this specific battle against Red Scale, the thesis found a plot twist.
Oh.
Adding a small amount of phosphorus up to 0.1 weight percent significantly reduce the Red Scale defect.
Okay, I need you to walk me through this carefully. We just established that the problem is a liquid layer, the phaolite that acts like glue.
Yes.
Does the phosphorus, what, dry up the liquid?
No, it actually makes the layer more liquid.
I'm losing the thread here. If liquid phaolite is the root system that anchors the scale, why does adding phosphorus, which makes it more liquid, solve the problem?
It's a brilliant nuance of phase diagrams. It all comes down to the melting point and, crucially, the timing. Phosphorus forms a compound called Ki2O5. When this mixes with a phaolite, it creates a eutectic mixture.
Eutectic meaning?
Meaning the mixture has a much lower melting point than the individual ingredients. It stays liquid at much lower temperatures.
Okay, so it stays melty even when it cools down.
Exactly. Remember the glue mechanism. The phaolite is liquid in the furnace, but as it travels to the descaler, the air cools it down. It solidifies before the water hits it.
Right.
That solidification is what locks the roots in place.
It hardens into an anchor just as you're trying to remove it.
Precisely. But with the phosphorus added, that freezing point drops drastically. So when the steel travels to the descaler, the interface layer doesn't solidify. It stays fluid.
Oh. So when the high-pressure water hits it, it's not hitting a solid anchor. It's hitting grease.
That's a perfect analogy. It acts as a lubricant. The scale creates a slip system. Because the bond hasn't frozen yet, the mechanical force of the water can easily shear the scale right off.
That is fascinating. So the liquid itself isn't the enemy. The solidification of the liquid at the wrong moment is the enemy.
Exactly. It's not about liquid versus solid. It's about managing the phase transition relative to the manufacturing timeline. Phosphorus buys you time. It keeps the interface slippery during those critical few seconds when the descaler is firing.
It seems like such a delicate balancing act. You're adding silicon for strength, nickel for toughness, and then sprinkling in phosphorus, which is normally bad, just to act as a temporary lubricant for the surface, all while tripping not to ruin the internal structure.
It really is high-wire chemistry, and this thesis just highlights that metallurgy isn't just heating things up and hitting them with hammers. It is high-precision engineering.
You're managing diffusion rates, thermodynamic stability, and eutectic melting points on a 3-ton slab moving at high speed.
And if you get the ratio wrong, if you have too much nickel and not enough phosphorus, or if your conveyor belt is too slow and the steel cools too much, you end up with Red Scale.
And a product you have to scrap. It really changes how you look at everyday objects.
Yeah.
You know, you see a stainless steel toaster or a smooth car fender, and you just assume metal is shiny.
It takes a lot of work to make metal shiny. Nature wants it to be a rusty red mess.
That smooth surface is a victory. It's a victory over the natural tendency of silicon to root, nickel to roughen, and iron to rust.
It's a victory over the phthalate glue.
And that is the big takeaway for today. We often take materials for granted, but there's this invisible, microscopic war happening to get them to us. Huge thanks to the work of Yun Ju Song for giving us a map of that battlefield.
It was a genuinely illuminating read.
And thank you to you, the listener, for deep diving with us. Next time you see a rusty red streak on a piece of metal, don't just walk on by.
Blame the phthalate.
Blame the phthalate. Until next time.